at a low spot where it hurt us all on the conversation. And had to split it up. And we could, but we didn't.
Did you meet her?
No, I had to go. I'm gonna cut all our money that's sitting in line. I would let him put stuff on our minds and now versus having a problem with each other. But anyway, it's, we have to talk. And we need Todd to. The revisions came to like 3 o'clock this afternoon. And we now have this improved surface. We have significantly improved trauma for that surface.
Are you?
Out of 15 years. It's not going to be the amount of. I have asked for that.
We tell him every day.
Are you sure? Because what's going to happen if it runs off the air? Are you sure she will just sweat in or something else? Are you sure? But I didn't approve the trailers.
And they put that trail in.
I didn't even want to say hello.
But now that we're doing this agreement, I think it's going to.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'd like to get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the North Salt Lake City Council meeting for March 21st, 2023. And yay, it's spring now. The weather will suddenly change and everything will be good, huh? We'd like to excuse Council Member Natalie Gordon, who's ill and won't join us tonight. Is she joining online, do we know? Okay. Next item is a thought of prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance with Councilmember Knowlton.
Okay, thanks, Mayor. For my thought, I'm going to share some messages that come by way of the governor's statewide growth conversation. This is called Guiding Our Growth, and I have been part of the team that is working on this. You're looking at this little bookmark, and there's enough copies that those in the audience who would like one, you can have them. They're on the corner of the little thing. There's also some in the back, and then I have more up here. I'm just going to read the ones on the white side here. I will just, as a preface to this, say that this comes from testing statements with residents through sort of a rigorous survey process. So these have been tested. They're also true. One, what makes Utah great also makes Utah grow. The corollary of that is that to stop growth, we would have to make Utah not a great place to live. Utah's appeal means that others move here and our children want to stay. Growth can threaten what makes Utah great if we don't plan for it. Utah can remain a great place to live, but we must work together to protect or improve Utah's housing cost, water resources, transportation convenience, recreation opportunities, and sense of community. And it's time to come together to guide our growth. Now, the governor's statewide growth conversation kicks off on May 11th, and we will see it as a community and also hopefully much broader. There will be media associated with this. So I wanted to highlight it for everybody, not just in a council report, given that I think it's timely, how fast we're growing, and that it is nearing a kickoff in again in early May. I will add one small bullet to this, which is I see a lot of how people talk about growth. And I think there's a very common misconception that somehow when we build new buildings, we are causing growth. And that the corollary of that is somehow if we keep new buildings from our community, we are reducing the amount of growth. When that's just not true. What we do is we change where that growth takes place. And ultimately, I think an underlying message and exploration in the guiding our growth processes. So if it's really hard or even counterproductive to stop growth, let's think about where growth ought to occur. What are the best strategies and locations. So if you would, be on the lookout for that process and the kickoff on May 11th. And that is my thought. Please join me in the pledge.
Thank you, Ted. I just wanted to add something that kind of interesting thing that happened to me a week ago. I'll flashback 40 years ago, college student, okay, a little longer than 40 years, but college student on spring break. We went to Southern California, me and a couple of friends. On the way back, we stopped at Bryce Canyon. So it was this exact time of the year. There was a lot of snow like there is this year. We drove up. We pulled into the parking lot, and the snow was deep enough that we just had no idea where the canyon was. It was could have been over there, could have been over there, and we didn't know what to do. We were the only ones around, and we were getting ready to leave, and a park ranger pulls up with a snowblower and clears the sidewalk, and so we went up and looked out over Sunset Point. Well, a week ago, I was coming back with my wife from Northern Arizona, and we decided to run up to Bryce Canyon. And I was like, hopefully this it's plowed going in and we got to Sunset Point and there was no parking. It was that full. And the whole place was packed. And so in 40 years, things have changed. It's time to stop advertising our Mighty Five parks. We'll start with that. Our next item is citizen comment. If there's anyone here to address the council, please come forward, identify yourself and your address.
D. Lawless. I live on 74 East 300 North. After I attended the Planning Commission and the public hearing of the rezoning of part of North Salt Lake City Center last week. I drove around that city center. I also drove around part of Bountiful and Woods Cross. I listened to all 40 members or whoever, how many of them there were that spoke at the meeting. And I did not see in anywhere in Bountiful or Woods Cross any buildings over three stories high. There may be some. I don't know if we have any on the west side and out just west of the Redwood Road in Foxborough, if any of those are over three stories. But one of the things that came to me from that meeting is that we should limit all of the buildings in North Salt Lake to at least less than four stories or four stories at the most, unless maybe out here in the gravel pit where people don't care to look over it. We could put a six-story building there and it wouldn't make any difference. It wouldn't block anybody's view. Driving into it is not part of the city. You wouldn't like, as I have here, I think our city center should represent a more warm and cordial atmosphere than a New York City canyon land. I've been in New York City. You walk down there and all you do is look up. We have wind tunnels there. I think that North Salt Lake should put in their new code that we should limit all building heights to no more than four stories. Another thing is that the residents, as they were talking about the proposed building over here, the buildings, if you look at 130 East, it is basically in my estimation, a residential street, not a feeder street. And when people park on both sides of it, it becomes a very, very dangerous thing. And I know the mayor looked at this. One of the things that I think is a big problem is we want to make this area around here a walkable and a entertaining type area. You don't put 500,000 cars on streets where you want children to walk or people to walk or people to maybe even use those streets as a walkable street. I think that it deters greatly from that that idea that we have. excuse me. I've lived here for 50 years or more, and that triangle up there has been a problem. The stand can probably look at that, and the rest of you. They've brought in businesses. They last 6 months. North Salt Lake is a bedroom community, and I think that we need to look at that somewhat. But just because we are a bedroom community, I don't think we need to provide all the beds for everybody that needs to have a bed out there. I think that we have a responsibility to ourselves, to those who live here, those who have been here for some period of time. And I think if you look at the state code, it says that the state, that cities are not allowed to rezone properties to make developers rich or to make the land worthless without due cause. And I don't think that putting a six-story building, and as all of you probably know, that was voted down to not do that, but we have builders who say, that's the only way I can make any money. And I don't think we have a responsibility to make developers rich. Again, part of the problem is if you go over there in the daytime, you'll find out that the current development that's already done, we have a parking problem. People park their trucks on the street because their garages won't hold them because the truck is bigger than the garage is. We have people that are parking. One of the suggestions was we'll park over in the school parking lot or park over here in the academy parking lot. We should not be building buildings and saying park on somebody else's property. We have enough problems out on the west side where we have HOAs that say you can't park on the street, go park on the city street in front of somebody else's house. We're working on the Unified Code, and I think that we should make sure that that code reflects that those things that we want, and I think that anything over four stories should be written out of that code. And I think that when I asked Sherry, she said that the new code does allow six-story buildings in the core district. Is that right?
Five and a half.
Five and a half stories. Close enough. So I think that we have a real responsibility to the residents, to the neighborhood up there. They express the desire that we do create something that goes with the city park. If we were to put high-rise buildings anywhere in this area, I think it would detract very much from what we're trying to do with Hatch Park over here, of creating a walkable city center where people can come and enjoy it. And I think that we have a responsibility not only to those who may live here, but also those who've lived here for a long time and will live here from now and in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee. I remember when Renaissance Center was built. It was the tallest building in Davis County. I don't know if it still is, but this building would have exceeded that. Yeah. Anyone else? Okay, we'll move on. Next item is recognition of Christine Pepin for years of service on the Parks, Trails, Arts, and Recreation Advisory Board. And just a quick little note on this. Christine has been on the board for almost 5 years, served a full term and portion of a second term. She's recently retired professionally and is ready to move on to new and better things. And we've got a plaque here to present to Christine. So if you'll come forward.
No, I said you have a 30-minute presentation.
Oh, okay. All right, I can do that.
Anyway, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
so much about the city. My husband and I will have lived here 24 years next month, so we've lived here a long time. And everyone here in the city, the employees, are awesome. And it's fun. Thank you to Dallas and Camille and Jeff for being here on the committee. It has been fun with them, and it was a nice experience.
Thank you so much.
So thank you for your recognition.
Mayor, can we also recognize the other members of the Parks and Arts Board that are here?
Hi.
A really good turnout. It's impressive. It's a really, really great group. They work really hard for the city. The hours that they put into the events for the city, I know because I've been there, it can be really extensive, and it pays off. It's a real asset that you bring to the city. Thank you.
So we have Jeff, right? Jeff Skroger, Camille Thorpe, and Dallas Golden from the committee. So thanks.
And I'll just, yay. I'll just note that it's really cool of the three of them to come and celebrate Chris's time. And it also just is, I think, gives you a sense of the closeness of the Parks, Arts, Trails, and Recreation group. So it's a great group of people.
Okay, next item is consideration of a site plan for WDG NSL Flex Building located at 723 West, 1100 North, Wright Development Group. Sherry?
Thank you. So this is the site that is next to the Come and Go gas station. If you remember, we did a two-lot subdivision for the Krause Crossing subdivision. This is the easternmost site. It's at the direct end of the runway of Sky Park, but it's a 2.47 acres. The proposed structure is 37,000 square feet, which is why it's before the council tonight. Anything over 30,000 square feet gets a recommendation from the Planning Commission and final approval from the City Council as per ordinance. It is zoned MD. As I stated, it's right there at the end of that flight path, so I just wanted to make note that they have received several letters from the FAA with their determination of no hazard to air navigation based on the siting of the building, the height of the building, and the proposed uses within the building. So they're looking good on that. At the time of Planning Commission, there were a few red lines that were needed to be taken care of before it was placed on your agenda, and all of those items have been taken care of. So just to give you a little rundown of the basics of the project, this is a flex space building, so with some office space up front and warehouse space in the back, which meets the FAA guidelines for the type of uses that are supposed to have a low population density. So we don't want to have a call center with 1,200 people right under the airport, but a warehouse with fewer employees is more appropriate. So this has two driveways onto 1100 North. They're both 40 feet in width, and they're spaced more than 80 feet apart, according to our ordinance. The building site does meet all of the required setbacks, the lot lines, coverages, and the landscaping standards. The parking for this building, the minimum parking space according to our code is 52 spaces. The Planning Commission did reduce that requirement to 50 spaces based upon the use, and the code does allow them to do that and make that recommendation. The landscaping for this site is approximately 22,000 square feet, or 20% of the site. The minimum in the MD zone is 15%. There is no sod on this site. They would have been limited to a maximum of 5,000 square feet of sod, but they haven't put any sod on this site. One thing to note on this site is there are no trees because of the location and proximity to the airport, so that's one of the FAA regulations. So instead of putting street trees in the park strip or in the parking islands, they have done a really good job of doing xeriscape in their proposal, and lots of plant vegetation that exceeds our standard for the minimum. But the Planning Commission did also recommend waiving those trees in the park strip. And then the architecture of the building. So our architectural design standards have specifics for roof variation, for horizontal and vertical articulation. And the building is only 22 feet tall, so it doesn't need any of the horizontal articulation, just the vertical articulation and then the roof variation. And it does meet our design guidelines for our architectural standards. So with that, the Planning Commission did make a favorable recommendation to the City Council, again, conditioned upon those red lines being taken care of. And those have been addressed to the satisfaction of engineering and planning departments.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have a question, Mayor. And I don't know if Sherry, if you can answer that, or if the applicant is here and wants to answer. Why do they want a bigger building than what's allowed in the code right now? Do you know?
Oh, it's not bigger than what's allowed. It's just the size of the building. Our standard in the site plan review is any building that's under 30,000 square feet is only reviewed by the Planning Commission. Anything over 30,000 square feet is reviewed by Planning Commission and City Council.
Okay, I see. So it's just
It's just a function of our code.
Got it.
This is a great project. I'm impressed. One question I have on the rendering, on both sides it's notched out. Is that the driveways?
On the
top one?
This
no.
one?
Yeah, well, no. The one, the next picture over, next one. See how it's notched out in the front on both sides?
So those are bay doors, so they are lower in so that the back, when you back up the semi-truck, the loading door is at the dock height.
Okay. But so this is different than the driveways?
Yeah, the driveways are, they'll slope in from the driveways on us when you get further into the parking lot, so the trucks go down.
Okay. It's a big investment. It's impressive.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the requested site plan for the WDG NSL Flex building located at 723 West, 1100 North, with no conditions.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-13R proclaiming April 29th, 2023 as Arbor Day in the city. And I'll turn this over to Lisa.
Ken and Mayor, you're both very gracious to turn it over to me. We've done Arbor Day for a long time. In my first term on City Council was when we started to do it. I think it was 2005. There are signs on the city that said we've only been doing it for 7 years. We need to have those banners updated. I keep saying that to TJ. Anyway, the proclamation is written. It's beautiful, but I'm just going to read a couple things about this. It says, the trees beautify our entire city and enhance our surroundings when planted and cared for in our public parks, along park strips, on private lands, and within recreation areas, such as our golf course and biking and hiking trails. And trees clean the air and water, attract birds and wildlife by providing habitat, moderate the earth's temperature, decrease energy costs, provide shade and windbreaks, impede the erosion of our precious soils, topsoil, and create a more livable community. And then finally, they provide us with a source of enjoyment, hope, and spiritual renewal. So that's beautifully written. I guess somebody, Ken, did you write that?
No, I can't take credit for that.
Well, anyway, whoever wrote it, thank you. That's the resolution 2023-13R. It's a resolution of the governing body of the city proclaiming April 29th, 2023 as Arbor Day in the city of North Salt Lake. And I'll make a motion that we pass this resolution.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further comment? Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. And it's a great event. And invite everyone to come out and plant a tree. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-14R, a resolution approving the access agreement. Oh, this item's tabled, sorry. Well, do we need to have a motion to table it?
I think it would be good if the council would motion to table
okay.
this.
We've decided to not move forward with this, and I'll entertain a motion to table this resolution.
I think I've got the right one. This is the resolution 2023-14R?
Correct.
I'll make a motion to table consideration of resolution number 2023-14R.
Second.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you. That motion's tabled. Next item is consideration of purchase of a 2024 Timeco 600 regenerative air sweeper. Is that the real title for this thing?
It's Timco. Regenerative air sweeper.
John?
So, all right. I just want to take a second before we really get into the sweeper part and just kind of talk a little bit about sweeping. These are some of our records from the past 7 years of sweeping, the miles that we've swept annually. So you can see we've really increased significantly the amount we have that sweeper out from 324 miles in 2016 all the way up to 4,820 miles this past year. The map on the right is the zones that we kind of broke sweeping up into. And the table at the bottom shows how many times we've swept each zone by year. And you can see that we've increased that significantly where we were sweeping like two times back in 2016 all the way up to 17 and 18 times this past year. So we have that sweeper out quite a bit, and I think it's making great improvements in the cleanliness of the city and keeping our stormwater stuff clean. So with that, 4,820 miles, this is what that looks like. That's running the sweeper at 3 miles an hour from Los Angeles to New York back to Evanston, Wyoming. So Cole Staker here on the right, he's driven all those miles. So he just loves going a long way at 3 miles an hour. So hats off to him. So, when we get into the sweeper here, this is, we're proposing to replace our 2015 Timco 600 regenerative air sweeper with a new 2024 Timco regenerative air sweeper. The expected delivery time for this new sweeper is 45 to 60 weeks. It was budgeted for in this budget year. We won't have any payments or anything until next budget year in 2024, where we will be doing a 5-year lease that comes from the Stormwater Department. We expect to get some revenue from the old sweeper. It's hard to get an exact cost since it's still a year out before we'll be trading that in. But the assumption is that's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $70,000. So we'll be financing $300,000 for this sweeper. And this is under state contract MA-3488 with Intermountain Sweeper Co. So, I don't know if you have any questions.
Do we get the talking head with the truck?
The talking head? Yeah, if you pass, Cole passes you, you can feel free to wave him down and talk to Cole there.
John, what's the process for disposing of the, emptying the vacuum bag?
The back? So that back door swings open. There's a raker bar in the back that scrapes out the stuff that gets collected by the pickup head on the bottom.
And how do you dispose of it?
So we had built a new facility down at our public works that we back the sweeper into, and this facility slopes so the water can run off and the stuff can drain out. Then we, once it's dried, we haul that up to the landfill.
Okay.
So. Basic question. Do these then also take care of gunk in a storm drain?
Yeah, that hose on the back we use to clean out the occasional storm drain box if we need to. We mostly clean out storm drain box with the Vactor truck. with a contractor like Twin D or somebody else as a Vactor truck. And when they clean out the storm drain pipes, they also clean out the inlet boxes.
I have a question, John. Yeah. So I can see this was budgeted and forecasted that it would need to be replaced in this time. But I'm wondering, is it, so we had it in operation for, it looks like, 8 years. Is that pretty typical for a sweeper, that they only are really in service for about that long?
Yeah, the parts inside start to break down. So you start to run into a lot of maintenance issues. The longer you keep them, they cost a lot of money to maintain.
Any other questions for John?
Yeah, one more. I guess you're kind of beefing up the sweeping before this runoff. You do an extra effort to clean off the drains and so forth?
Yeah, we've been out there when we can, when the gutters aren't full of snow. He goes out all the time. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the mileage, but I am concerned about flooding, so I presume you are as well.
Yes.
And I get those questions, too, in my area. Hey, when is the street sweeper going to come, or when? What about the storm drains? And I didn't want to bring it up like a little item like that, but just those questions are out there. The basic answer is, hey, we're working on it.
We are working on it, yeah. So yeah.
Soon. That's what I was, soon.
Well, so I think there's a few questions that, the question I think we get a lot right now, because it's been in the news, is flooding, and we've been out inspecting a little bit more, just to make sure that all of our drains are working properly. We've had a couple of pretty strong rainstorms, not snowstorms, and I know John and I were both out on the last one, which was a pretty big storm, just driving around making sure that things were functioning, and they are. And so I think individual areas like your street or your neighborhood, we're just continuing to sweep as we can, and those storm drains get cleaned out at least once a year, and I don't know if it's more often than that, John, but anyway, we try to monitor every storm and make sure everything is working properly. There are exceptions, of course. And we'll run into, during a storm, sometimes we run into a storm drain grate that's covered in leaves or debris, and we have to stop and open it up again. But those things happen, too. Yeah. But I think our city's fairly prepared, because these guys are watching the weather every day. And I think I said in my little report to the council last week, or last Monday, yeah, a week ago Monday, that... this is my opinion, but I think it's a good thing that the mid-foothills has been melting, and it's been melting at a not a super fast pace, but I think we have lost a lot of snow in the mid-level foothills, and so that's a good thing for our city in particular. So I expect that there will be flooding, I think, but the rainfall helps, and the fact that the temperatures are above freezing, it helps also.
Mayor, I'm ready to make a motion.
Thank you.
I move that the City Council approve purchase of a 2024 Timco 600 regenerative air sweeper from Intermountain Sweeper Company under the State of Utah Cooperative Purchasing Contract MA3488 for the price of $372,360.
I'll second the motion.
Have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's do roll call. Ted?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes.
All right. We used to have a planning commissioner, Kent Kirkham, and he always had a pun for everything. I was trying hard to think of what he would say on that item, but I didn't come up with it. So.
Okay. Yeah. John, while you're up there, why don't we talk about a Ford F-150?
All right. So we have this 2005 GMC Canyon that is in our fleet that we are going to be replacing with a new 2023 Ford F-150. It's currently used in the streets department. This truck here, the GMC Canyon meets, it's in the advisable category of our 15-point inspection for miles, age, and maintenance. Currently, the air conditioning in that truck is shot and needs some significant work to restore that. And as time goes on, the repairs for regular routine maintenance are going to increase, beyond just oil changes and things like that. So we got a state bid contract, MA3792 from Young Automotive Group for a Ford F-150 for $51,554. This is budgeted out of the general fleet fund.
Any questions?
I have a question about the 15-point evaluation system criteria. Did you create that, David? Is that standardized?
No, it's just it was the policy when I got here, but it's mileage, and you just get points for everything. So
it's impressive. I like it. Thank you.
No further questions. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that the City Council approve the purchase of a 2023 Ford F-150 from Young Automotive Group under the State of Utah Cooperative Purchase Contract MA3800 for the price of $51,554.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Let's do roll call.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, John. Or let's go to the next one.
Yeah, I'm still here.
This is consideration of resolution 2023-15R, a resolution declaring certain public works department vehicles a surplus.
So we have the Canyon that we just talked about and the street sweeper. So the approximate blue book value for the Canyon is roughly like $4,500. And we'll be sending that one to the auction. And then, like I said, mentioned earlier with the sweeper, when we get the trade-in value, when we get the new delivery of the new sweeper, we'll trade that in with the Intermountain Sweeper Company.
Any questions? Is the auction the best way to dispose of these? Would the dealership that we're buying the new vehicle from take it, the old one, as trade in?
They haven't in the past. It seems that we've done fairly well at the auction when we put the reserve minimums on them.
I know they seem to be desperate for used cars and trucks. But
we always do put a minimum price on it, so okay. We don't just take the lowest bidder. We put a floor price on it.
Yeah.
So I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
That we approve resolution 2023-15R, surplusing the two pieces of equipment, the 2015 Timco and the 2005 GMC, authorizing Second. The public works director to dispose of it.
Such their service will never be forgotten.
Second.
We have motion and second. Let's do roll call with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, John.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
Next item is consideration of authorizing repairs for the city culinary water well for the amount of $43,803 to Nickerson Company. Karen?
So we talked about this in January. A brief recap, subsidence, the wells are having issues. We have the subsidence occurring that's creating torsion. So we've been working on this. So we have now pulled the pumps, we have fixed new well, and reinstalled the well sills lower, put some additional parts in. And at the time we came to City Council for those repairs, in January, there was no known damage to the interior pump and casing at Honeywell. So the new well repair is finished. The new expansion joint is the black bulby thing on the right at the bottom of the piping.
And the way it works is as those pipes move differentially, that flexes in both directions while still restraining the pipe. So new well is 100% completed. We're really excited about that. When we pulled the pump and the columns from Honeywell, there was significant damage on the parts that were down inside the well. They were not caused by the distortion. It was just wear and age. When Honey first starts pumping, the water is fairly dirty, and we get quite a lot of material for the first few minutes during the time that's the pump to waste. And so it's not put into the system. It clears up. But if you look at the fin on the picture, the flange piece that's kind of coming up vertically in between the metal and that bottom picture, you can see how thin that is. That material has worn through those impellers. And before we put it back in, because the cost is quite significant to pull and reinstall a pump, this is the time to replace them. So there are some sections of column we can reuse. Most of it needs to be replaced. The pump needs to be replaced, the well screen, the impellers. So we also videoed the well. I thought it would be really illustrative for you guys to actually see what that video looks like. This is the inside of our culinary drinking water well. So the outer walls are what are called well screens, and you can see through some of those pieces where you can see the well screen or casing on the backside. Quite a few of them are plugged. You can see as the camera moves in, it's knocking material off those walls, and that's what you see falling through the water. I know it's tasty, right? So we need to clean the well and do a thorough scrubbing of the interior of the casing, as well as cleaning. The surging will help move that material and allow us to pump it out. So we have previously done...
Mayor, before you move on, what is the gunk on the inside? What is it?
Soylent.
Somebody just
Soylent green. Oh.
So what ends up happening in different kinds of wells is as it's coming in, that sand and that silty material builds up. And then when you brush up against it, it falls off.
It's basically it's benign. Sand and soil.
Yeah. Okay. It's benign, but it needs to be cleaned. In some situations, you'll have things that, like bacteria, particularly like iron-reducing bacteria. We don't have that problem in this well. So we'll be reinstalling the well sill, pulling the pump, redoing all of that lowering work on that well discharge head. In addition, we've already authorized the well cleaning. They came and did that last week. And so Ken authorized that amount prior to tonight. The additional work that we're asking for authorization for is the new pump, new shafting for that well in the amount of $48,803.
Our notes here say 43. Is that a typo?
It is a typo on the screen. The correct amount is $43,803.
Okay.
I apologize. The PowerPoint is wrong.
You're trying to get an extra $5,000 for your department there, weren't you?
You know I'll spend it on something. Yeah. Like, so exciting, like cleaning a well.
Yeah. I'll make a motion unless we have discussion.
Okay.
I'm excited about this one, actually. I move the City Council approve repairs to the Honeywell and authorize this project in the amount of $43,803 to the Nickerson Company, Inc.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion? Let's start with Lisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you, Council. That passes. Thank you, Karen. Next item is approval of the minutes from March 7th. I don't believe I had any changes. Does anyone else have anything to add, subtract? I'll entertain a motion to approve minutes.
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve meeting minutes from March 7th, 2023.
I'll second the motion.
We have motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Minutes are approved.
And again, thank you to, I know it is many hands that go through this and yeah. make sure that they're as lovely as they are when they come here. Thank you.
Action items. Is there any updates, petitions, subtractions?
I have a question about an action item. Is there any updated information on the Foxborough Wetlands project? Is it forever tabled?
Oh, no, it's not tabled. We are continuing to work with the Army Corps of Engineers to get our amended, you might remember that we're trying to get a permit for the project without the pond. They have indicated to our consultant that that they believe they'll get that reviewed and approved in the next few months. And our consultant felt confident enough that that we are starting to work on construction plans for the project, and we expect to be able to go out to bid in the fall and for a winter commencement on construction and opening next spring, maybe a year from now.
That's thrilling. Thank
so
you.
That I will hedge my statement by saying all of that's dependent on the Army Corps of Engineers giving us an actual permit. But they've indicated that they will. So that's the first good news we've had in a long time.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking.
You know, I had a interaction with GSA on the Social Security build out, and there was we'd have a conference call once a week. 20 people would get on it from various parts of the country, and it was the government shutdown excuse for 6 months, and then it snowed in Denver. And we had training this week we had to go to, and it took 2 years, and I was just stunned. I was just stunned how long it took. And any other questions on action items?
Yeah, I've got one, I guess. I've noticed we had the action item on here to deal with Steve Mosman on Gary Way with the golf course, and it's not on here any longer, so... I know that he was kind of asking since spring's coming, and I told him to call Ken, but I don't think he has yet. But
well, we've been paying claims, and that may be why he's not calling either one of us.
Well,
and we'll
there's
continue
not many claims in the wintertime.
Yeah, well, I mean,
yeah.
Well, even before winter.
Okay.
I think, I don't want to put words in our city attorney's mouth, but I think our advice from legal counsel was that we not put in writing a policy that can be used against us, but that we pay claims, and we've been doing that. Kind of with that, I believe was my recollection was that was the desire of the city council for homes along Gary Way that experienced damage, that we work with the golf course. Personnel to pay those claims. Okay. We don't have insurance for it, so we have them work with Tyler to get those claims done. So I'm not working on a policy, if that's what you were. I think that's what the previous action item said, was that we were going to adopt a policy and look at getting insurance. I don't believe that we can find insurance for it, and secondarily, I agree with our legal counsel that we ought not to put in writing a policy that would be used against us potentially. Now, having said that, we want to take care of those residents on Gary Way. So that's, I think, where we've left it.
Okay.
Which I know Mr. Mosman won't not. I don't think he likes that answer. I've told him we'd pay those claims, so if he has problems, he can call Tyler or he can call me on those.
There's just no solution, I guess.
There's not a really great solution.
Mayor, there was something on this list, or maybe not on the list, but I asked for a speed sign on Center Street, heading down Center Street. How are we doing on that?
this is going to sound crazy, but the weather has, those are solar powered, and I don't know if you've even noticed that the permanently fixed one on Center Street has been going out for us. We just have not had enough power to generate that. And when you combine the portable one with the issue that it has to stay powered through solar panels, and also the, how wide it is and parking it on the side of such a busy street during the winter, we've just felt that we don't want to create that hazard. But as the snow starts going off and we get sunnier days, that has been discussed with our traffic guys, and we will get that out there. Just to let you know, though, Lisa, I have gone out with just my little radar that I use once in a while, and the speeds coming down Center are notable to be, they need to be slowed down when the weather is good. So there is no doubt that needs to happen there.
Great, thank you.
We'll put that on the action item list. That's a good action item.
I have a question that's a follow-up from something we discussed last year, which was increasing the reservation fee for the Boweries in the city, and then the Parks Department was going to come back. I think it was going to be this summer and yeah. See if it had
We didn't have enough data from last summer.
Oh, has it been that long?
So we're planning on reporting back to the council at the end of this season in 2023.
Okay.
So that is on our list.
Did I say that right, David?
Had been that long. Okay.
And then I have a question that maybe fits here with the action items, maybe for my own report. There is a semi-truck that is parked in an industrial area right along Redwood Road, and there is significant graffiti on the side of the truck that is facing the road. What are there any city requirements or code requirements for the business to address that graffiti if it is on the side of a truck?
I don't know of anything in our code. Do you know of anything, Craig?
That's too bad. It's really ugly.
Is it a free speech issue?
No, it just looks like graffiti.
I know it isn't for you, but Todd's shaking his head yes. It actually could be.
Is it a business that's allowed to have that truck parked on their property like that? I think I know where you're talking about.
And they own the truck with the business?
As far as I can tell. It's right by the cafe.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking of, too, where those blue barrels are, right by where those blue barrels are. So, yeah, it's been there a long
time. Could the city do anything to encourage the owner to address it? I mean, maybe they don't care, but it makes the property look bad. The truck is almost the full length of the property, and then it's just got lots of graffiti on it.
I think we can always do a good job of reaching out to business owners and encouraging. But as far as following that up with a big stick, we may be out of luck on that one.
Or even offer to just paint it if they want. It's just like a beige truck. But if it was on somebody's fence, if graffiti was on somebody's fence, aren't they meant to cover it up? Would that not be a free speech issue? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the trains are, of course, they keep moving, hopefully. But I had a back alley next to my parking garage that all these businesses in the front, you know, were on Main Street, but the back alley was not in, there was several obscene words and such. And
what words were they?
Those, you know which words. And my boss just said, go back there and have that painted. And we just painted like seven different people's properties. Nobody complained. So much for free speech. Huh?
And I would, speaking as, you know, somebody who would maybe be able to share influence on policy, as a city, I would support efforts that we made either in personnel or in cost to cover up those types of things, even if the owner of the property doesn't care, as long as they don't oppose it. I think that it makes the city look more attractive, and I think it's worth the effort. I just turned off my microphone. I have one more that probably fits in this section as well, and it's just an update on the form-based code that is all complete, just needs a it's not complete. Okay, so there's still work to be done. All right. Great. Along with our citizen comment today, I am eager to maybe review some of those pieces with regard to parking and building height and things like that. Now I'm done.
All right. Is your mic still on?
Mayor, I've got a couple on that, but go ahead. On action items.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, one is on the, this is action item one, see if there's interest from Bountiful City in working with North Salt Lake on the pilot bike lane concept. And my, what I wanted to bring up is another option which could be vetted is to work with Woods Cross, and I think technically also a little bit Bountiful, on a Highway 89 path. Here's the rationale of that. The rationale is it's a state road, and the pathway would get you towards the Front Runner station. And for those two reasons, that path may be a candidate for the statewide trails program. So because there may be a funding stream tied towards the state route and the destination of the Front Runner, it may be something to just explore as a possible option to bring back to council. So welcome any comments on that. But the idea is to not discuss that as a group right now, but to just see if that makes sense for us to just do a gentle guidance to staff to vet that path out in addition to the Bountiful extension. You follow me?
Yeah. And maybe Redwood Road, is our trail there sufficient now from Woods Cross, or is there more of the
Our section is done.
Our section is lovely. Once you leave our city, it is not. In fact, there's not even sidewalks once you leave our city.
To the south? To the north and south, well. So maybe that could be included in that as well and do more there.
Okay, and then the other one is we, at one point, this is inspired by our Arbor Day conversation, at one point we were talking about increasing our tree coverage on public land, on land that we own. And I think that there was some work done on that. If there was, can we get a loop close on that? Here's what happened. And if staff thinks there's still opportunity to explore increasing our tree coverage on land we own, I think it would be useful for us to revisit that.
Thank you. Next item is council reports. Ted?
Okay.
Okay. So I actually may not have much. I think I've covered them here and there, but I'm not going to be here on the council meeting on the 4th. And I know that that may relate to the scheduling questions that we have coming up. And I was reflecting on the budget retreat that we have coming up, and my friendly suggestions are that we, at the end of the day, that we seek to kind of arm everybody in attendance, council plus staff, with let's understand the landscape, let's understand the health of the forest, and not necessarily kind of drill down too much on any particular tree, just to carry the metaphor. I think that it would be helpful for us to just kind of keep that basic objective in mind, and that also, I would say, if we can aim for a good balance of reports and also strategizing, that would be helpful. Friendly suggestions. And that's it.
So, just for clarification, because I've been thinking about this as well, in a typical meeting, staff makes their presentations, presents their budget, and then at some point the council kind of comes out with their wish list. You know, I wish for world peace and total harmony. And to me, it seems like, because as a council member, you have a 20% vote in things, that really doesn't carry the day. And so it might be helpful if at the end of the meeting or at the end of our presentations, we voted and said, you know, this is what's number one, what's number two, what's number three, and then maybe just knock one out or something.
I love that idea.
Perfect.
Yeah, okay. So we may never get together and meet about it, but if we ever do, that's what we'll do. Okay, Ken?
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. So in the budget meeting, all of the council members might recommend projects that they want to support, and then we would decide among those projects which one we want to support that year.
Let's say the mayor had a crazy idea to, you know, build a skyscraper on Highway 89 or something, and everyone could go, no, I think that's, and so that wouldn't happen. And, you know, we kind of zero in on, because I think staff goes away at the end of the meeting and goes, well, you know, Stan wanted to do this and Lisa wanted to do that. And do we have budget for anything, or, you know, so we kind of, maybe just a way of prioritizing and something we can all feel good getting behind.
I think that's a great idea.
Lisa.
We had the senior lunch bunch the day after this last city council meeting. It was very well attended, 50 plus people. But the UTA came and gave a presentation on ride sharing and appointments to get transit and transportation to a really interested audience, and it was really great. And so Wendy set that up with the UTA, and I was very appreciative of that. And I think then they had pamphlets in the back, lots of information. And one thing I think that was nice is they say at UTA, if you want to have training on how to use the bus, they'll actually come to your house, go with you to the bus stop, put you on the bus, take you for the ride, take you back on the ride, and get you back to where the bus started. So that if you're afraid of traveling, which, or if it's a skill that you haven't yet acquired, they're going to help you do it one-on-one, which is crazy and amusing service. It's unbelievable that they would do that. And I think that I'm going to utilize it because I could use some help in that. And it was just really exciting for those people to sit there and hear that. And then again, it's just growing. The senior lunch bunch seems to be getting more people every month. So that makes us all happy.
Stan?
Well, my meeting's not until later this week, so I don't have a lot to say. And I didn't, with this legislative session going on, I know that there's quite a bit of money appropriated to the Jordan River Commission, working on the water on the Jordan River and getting to the Great Salt Lake, but I don't have all the details, so I think you'll have to wait until the next meeting to hear my report.
Kill the frag mighty so the water can get passed into the lake.
Yeah, I think that's a thought.
Elisa.
I attended the Youth City Council banquet at USU last Friday, and that was lovely. That was my first time ever attending that. And the Youth City Council is really full of remarkable youth, and I feel very, very proud to be associated with them. And I also want to commend our Youth City advisors. They work tirelessly, and I think it's a fair consideration to review in our budget if they are being compensated in a way that fits that. I would personally never take that assignment. So I'm very grateful for people that will, and I want to make sure we have a supply of people that will in the future. Let's see. I also attended the Planning Commission meeting to see the public comment on the proposed P district up here. And then just as a general, without any commitment or inability to be swayed, I really want the city to prioritize and support more commercial development. And as projects come through that are asking for any less development, I feel resistance to that immediately. I'm not saying I would never vote for something like that, but just as a general policy idea, I want to help support the city develop more commercial. Okay, next thing is the wellness survey is going phenomenally well. Thank you for all of your efforts that you made to share it. Our baseline was 375 responses, and as of today, we have 476. So we're already in the green. Thank you if you shared that, and if you didn't, it's not too late. The more responses we get, the more accurate the data is, and the more meaningful we can use that. So thank you for all of that effort. And then this month, the Health and Wellness Committee has suspended our own meeting and decided to attend different committees throughout the city. Part of our work this last year has been reviewing where do we meaningfully interject into the work in the city without duplicating work that's being done by other committees. And so most of your committees will have a member of the Health and Wellness Committee attending this month or maybe into April. And the purpose of that meeting is to listen for suggestions from your committees of this is what I think the Health and Wellness Committee in the city should be focused on, and we'll take that feedback back to our own meeting, and then to share some of our suggestions or mostly our support for the work that the other committees are doing, and that we see that as valuable not only in your domain but also as health and wellness within the city. So if you'll just make space for them in your next meetings and maybe give your committee members a chance in the meeting to offer feedback that they'll take back to our meeting. And then the last thing for me is just an update and a consideration of if we are going to do an additional Juneteenth event this year or if that was a one-off event that we did last year. I've been working with Jeff from the Parks and Arts Committee, who's very interested in continuing that event this year. With the committee that was created last year with the Juneteenth event, when we asked them if they wanted to do something again, one thing that they recommended was they didn't want this to be just a Juneteenth activity, but they thought that it would be of more value in the city to have it be more of a multicultural effort so that there might be a few events throughout the year, not just this one. The idea that Jeff and I had was to designate different food truck nights as potentially a Juneteenth night. That's how we did it last year, and there could be a few others throughout the year. So we'll continue talking about that. We're going to take that to the Parks and Arts Committee to talk about as well. If any of you have opinions about that, please share them with me, and I will bring those to those decision-making moments. That's it.
Thank you. I was, I don't know why I'm always shocked at what happens in our community, because I guess I have rose-colored glasses, but I was surprised at the number of OD revivals or attempts of revival. It's always kind of heartbreaking. Todd, do you have anything for us?
Nothing tonight, Mayor.
Thank you. I've only got a couple things, I think. My first item was gophers. I guess the city's already aware of. We have some residents that think that our golf course is the problem with gophers, and so they want us to solve that. But I wanted to let the council know, and I mentioned this to Ken as well, but on April 5th, I will be meeting and having lunch and maybe riding a train even with Lance Fritz, who's the chairman, president, and CEO of Union Pacific Railroad. And so hopefully we'll head north and we'll point out all the cars having to stop on Center Street and 1100 North and maybe talk about that. Another.
Is it all the mayors that are going?
I don't know. The invitation came specifically to me with nobody else I could see.
But that's great if they're going
to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hope so. Yeah. Next item is, you know, to quote Top Gun, my mouth's always writing checks my body can't cash. I'm working on a fundraising idea, and it's probably at that point where I shouldn't go any further without getting some nods from the council. But last year we cut 4 minutes off the fireworks. And I don't know that anyone noticed, but we'll probably have to cut 4 minutes again this year as prices keep going up.
Or
So 8 minutes cut?
Maybe. We haven't seen a price yet, but I guess that I didn't want to leave that legacy of, remember how the fireworks used to be awesome and now they're just okay? And so I've approached a company, and I may not say who they are at this point because I don't know what's going to go very far. But I've thrown out the idea of for a fee, and I've thrown out $50,000 annually that they would have naming rights to our Liberty Fest. So it could be the XYZ Liberty Fest in North Salt Lake. And with the idea that, you know, we have 10,000 people at a car show and 25,000 people at fireworks and other events, and that they would just be the name sponsor of it. And Ted's nodding his head. Is everyone's okay with that?
It depends who the sponsor is, I have to say.
Like Energy Solution, you wouldn't go with that. It's Maverick. And
they do a lot in communities.
Yeah, and like I said, it may not go anywhere, and if it doesn't, I may go to Plan B or Plan C. But anyway, okay.
As long as it generates enough that the trade is worth it.
Yeah. Okay?
Because we're kind of losing our trademark, if you will, as North Salt Lake's fireworks if we have them be the sponsor. So it's got to be a balance that it's worth the money
and,
that they
and
pay
I'm,
as well.
I'm still committed to using some city funds to make up the difference. But I just didn't want to get to the point where it's like, we just can't afford this anymore. And
I also think it's a fair consideration to put in the back of our minds in no time in the immediate future that there may come a time where we decide not to do fireworks for the cost, for the environmental impact, and for the safety issue, but that we still invest in a show. I've seen other cities replace their fireworks with a drone show that is probably equally as expensive. I don't know, but just that there may come a crossover point where the costs feel like they are too high for us. I don't think we're there right now, just in the back of our heads.
Okay. And that's all I've got. Oh, I want to read one thing. I mentioned this once before, but the mayor of Sunset City received some severe burns in an accident, was hospitalized for a couple months, and he sent a letter out to all the cities. It's Dear Mayor Horrocks, during my recent absence from work due to a burn I received in an accident, I received many letters of concern from the Davis County mayors, commissioners, and citizens. I'd like to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for your letters, phone calls, notes of concern for my well-being. I am now back at work and healing fairly well. Thank you so much for concern and caring. So, I love Davis County. I'm just going to say that. I say that all the time. But we're a tight-knit community, and we look out for each other and care for each other, and that's what makes it great. That's all I've got. Ken.
Great, thanks. I have three simple items and one difficult one. So, the first is mark on your calendars, if you would, the 11th of May. That's a Thursday night. That's the final decision so far. The final decision on the golf course open house. We will have food and entertainment. I think that we'll probably have a brief ceremony, but the evening will be up on the deck, a nice evening where we can just socialize and enjoy the opening of the course. So this will be a nice event that you'll not want to miss. It's on a Thursday night, May 11th. I don't have a time yet. Probably early afternoon, maybe 5 to 8, something like that. The retreat date, I've looked at many, many dates. It appears that Saturday, April 15th is available, so I'm asking each of you tonight. Natalie said she's available on the 15th. Would you all be available on the 15th of April?
there's a Utah Women Run that we have an annual training on the 15th, but I can miss it if this is the day, mm-hmm. the best day that works for everyone.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Let's plan on that.
Okay.
We're talking like we usually do in the morning until yes. like 1 or something.
We think 8 o'clock till after, right after lunch. Okay. The next thing I added to my list, just as we were talking, I would remind the council that we authorized, that is the city authorized, a acceptance of a grant to perform a market study for the town center. This will address directly, Councilmember Van Langeveld, your question about commercial development. We have three finalist consultants who we've kind of narrowed it down to a preferred consultant, but we're doing a final meeting tomorrow, and so that project will get underway. It will take about 4 or 5 months at least to get the results, but we'll talk about that a little bit more as the project unfolds. I've seen sample reports of the work product, and I think it's exactly the kind of information we're going to need to inform ourselves about what's possible in the town center, both with respect to office, retail. It seems clear to me that our town center is not going to be a retail power center. It will not be a strip mall center. It won't necessarily have a traditional shopping center with an anchor grocery store. But it could have lots of really terrific retail, restaurants, gathering places, offices, and things that would be an attraction for the town center. Together with, and one of our consultants really hit this, I think, on the head, the preferred consultant, the one I think is the best one, talked also about the city's investment in the town center. And we are making that investment in Hatch Park, including, and this may be in a phase two, but including non-residential buildings. So we had, if you remember, we had some concepts that we would have some retail in Hatch Park, which I think is a really wonderful idea. So I just wanted to remind the council that's coming, so that I think that will really help us a lot. We have another proposal that we're working on that I won't really describe tonight, but that relates to the form-based code of the town center, and we'll talk more about that at the budget retreat, because we think there's also a way to partner with folks who can help us with some of the challenges we experienced in the most recent development proposal. We think it would be good to bring in some urban design talent to also assist us with the town center. Questions like Mr. Lawless raised tonight about building height and parking and other things. So we'll have some solutions to that as well. The last thing that I need to talk about is, and I have the clicker. There we go. Thank you, Wendy. She's way ahead of me all the time. Is to discuss a couple of complicated things on the 1100 North Bridge. And if I had thought ahead, I would have put this on the agenda. I always feel a little bit strange going too deeply into an issue without it being on the agenda. But with Todd's permission, he'll tell me if we've gone too far. We won't make any decisions, but I do need to talk about this. What you're seeing on the screen here is kind of the footprint of, up until now, has been the bridge project at 1100 North over the main line. This is the project, the outline of this was the bridge, and you can see if you go from right to left, it's kind of where 1100 North begins to ascend up over the tracks, and then it kind of descends on the other side of the tracks down to where it would intersect with a a main street that gets reoriented or swung out to the west. This has been the project that we've been working on for a long time. This project is also the one that's been denied by Union Pacific, and they have told us now in several meetings they will never approve this design unless they will not approve a project here unless the bridge crosses both rail corridors. And so the western side is the Woods Cross Industrial Lead, and the project will have to go across both. This map is an important map because it shows the number, by number, it shows some property owners who are impacted by this first project. And that number increases as we think of expanding the bridge. Here's why we're talking about this tonight. I had another meeting Friday with Bill Simmons, our lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and with representatives of Union Pacific, who are assisting us to put together a federal application to get about $60 to $70 million, which we think is half the money needed for this project. The other half would come from the state of Utah and from us and Davis County. We had a good meeting, and after Union Pacific left the call, I continued to have a good meeting with Bill Simmons. He assured me that that we can get this funding, but here's the issue that he raised with me. He said, doing this project is going to require many people, including your congressional representatives, to do some heavy lifting. They'll have to get funds appropriated. They'll have to put their names on our application as supporters. It will use a lot of political capital for these folks to do. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what the city's priority is. So he plainly said to me, is the city all in on this project? Are you going to, we're at a point now where we will continue to spend about $5 million to do the next design and get that into our federal application. He said, but it would be worse for the city to get down the road and at some future point, if property owners come to the city council and they put pressure on council members to not do the project or complain about the impacts of the project or otherwise say, look, you're taking my business, you know, that's going to destroy my life, my family, my everything I've worked for 50 years. I don't know if we have those people out here, but how is the city council going to react under that kind of pressure? So just let that ruminate a little bit. You don't need to answer that question. The other major problem, and let's see, I have the clicker, right? So there's another picture. Here's some more illustrations of that same project. I think this is always helpful to see this in 3D. You see where the bridge crosses. That's just another view. Okay, so this is a non-engineer. This is a city manager putting a footprint of the project on Google Earth. That's about the best I can do as far as artwork. This is the new footprint of the new project, approximately. Now, a few things happened here on this new project. Number one, it changes from a bridge that looks like this to more of, like as we've said before, a viaduct. So a bridge with pillars and openings underneath it, and it'll have land under it. And it sort of changes the character, the actual design of the bridge changes. But the other critical thing that Bill raised with me is Woods Cross going to be a supporter of this project, or are they going to fall off and be an enemy of the project? Because it's likely, it's very possible that the character of Main Street, which is Main Street in our city and 1100 West in their city, will fundamentally change. We may not have access to 1100 North anymore. Woods Cross has already told us they would be opposed to that idea. He said it could be really problematic for the purposes of all these influential people helping us get this done if Woods Cross is against us. So the bottom line here, and I'm not asking for answers tonight, but I want you to consider your support or not support in the future for this project before we embark on spending the $5 million and enlisting the help of a lot of important people to get this done. I told him I needed about a month to sort of work with the city council and maybe work with Woods Cross, and even we could even start to work with property owners, which we have not alerted in any direct way that this project has been worked on. So owners know that we're doing this. Some owners know. We've talked to a couple of people in our city. But I guess the one thing I would like to know from the city council is, what can I do to assist the council to answer this question of whether North Salt Lake is in this for the long haul, or do we want to maybe shelve this for a while, think about it some more? And I don't know. I'm not advising the council not to do the project. That's not my position. I just want to make sure that that we're doing what the council believes should be done, and that your support will be there in a year. And I realize maybe it won't even be the same city council in a year. I hope. I've tried to talk to Natalie and Stan about staying, but maybe you guys have too. But anyway, we may have different council members. And I'm trying to understand really our level of commitment to the project. I'm not questioning your level of commitment. I just wanted to make sure I transmitted to you that Bill Simmons has these concerns, that this project is doable, but it's going to require the city to cash in some political capital back in Washington, D.C., and we just can't change our minds later on, which is a hard position maybe to swallow. But we ought not to change our minds if we walk through this door to the next project. We really shouldn't. We shouldn't turn around and try to get back through the door.
Ken, can I jump in here?
Yeah.
And I've shared this with Ken as well. But first, I'd like to say that Ken and I are going to meet with Woods Cross and see if we can flesh out their level of commitment. But when I decided to run for mayor, I made this kind of my baby. And I just thought, man, if I can get this done, I'll have a sense that I accomplished something as mayor. You know, I am waffling at this point. This project has changed. And I try to envision what this viaduct would do to our neighborhoods, and the largest special interest group is the status quo, and we've lived with the status quo for years and years and years, and so I don't. It's not my intent either to try to sway the council one way or another, but I'm just honestly admitting I don't know how I feel about it at this point, and. I can be swayed one way or another too. And
I know we're not voting, but I've always in my heart thought this was a pipe dream and something that wouldn't ever happen. And then I hear tonight the $150 million. It my heart stops when I think of that. So that's maybe a new number I hadn't heard before.
Yeah, it's really it's between 120 and 130 million, the estimate.
There are several. I have a few questions I'd like to ask, and I am not decided on this, but I lean in favor of the project. I live on the west side, and traversing the city coming to the east across the train tracks is really unpleasant and does create safety issues. That there are times where if there is a blocked train, like today for 3 hours, maybe 1100 North is also very crowded. I will sometimes go all the way to 4th North and Bountiful because I know I can get across the freeway there. And that's really far away. So I would love to see an ability to get across the city. But that doesn't come without potential drawbacks that would be deal breakers for me as well. So can the question I have is, can you help me understand the process for the property owners that would be impacted by this? Where are they compensated and what options are they given?
Yeah, so so I apologize for not knowing completely the answer to that question, but to the extent that these property owners are, well, let me start a different way. The process includes an evaluation of the impacts of the bridge on the properties. And so a determination will be made if we need to simply acquire right-of-way from them or if we're going to fundamentally harm the economic value of that property. And there are ways that our engineers and other professionals do that. And then there will be properties where we may completely take the property. We may take away access and not have a way to replace it, which means the property has no value at all. So those estimates are in the $130 million. And for the properties where on this map, we have done some evaluation of that already. So for example, when you see Main Street swinging to the west, you can imagine that the property on the north side that looks vacant, that's going to be fully acquired. Maybe. Okay. We shouldn't talk about those things in open session. But you can just see from the footprint that there are different impacts on each property as you look at where those lines are. And so that's kind of how that will work. Thank you, Todd.
The last comment I have about this then is I agree that this will be a pretty significant impact to this area and that a viaduct is not typically a very pleasing aesthetic. So I would be in support of additional resources that the city puts into the landscape there. That maybe there's green space underneath or something where we invest at a higher level than what you would typically do underneath an overpass.
And recognizing that that may create problems in and of itself, we may have a Victory Road shanty town at some point there.
I guess I should say something. I wasn't as excited about this project until we just did the last thing with UTA, and we've got our project at the south end of town because I really think that's a higher priority than this one. But I think it needs to be done. It's going to take a while to do it. I wish there was another way to do it, like take the railroad's track and figure out how to move it. You know, sure seems like it'd be a lot cheaper to move it to the east rather than move our bridge to the west. That's my only thoughts. Is it just seems like, I know it's really hard working with the railroad, but like Crime Mini, that track's not used that much. You'd think it'd be easy to find another path for it along the other track for a ways and then move it back over to that side if they need it. But that's just my thoughts, is that I wish there was a better way to do it. And I sure hope that we've looked at those kind of options as well with the railroad. Let's just give you some land and make a way so you can run your few trains that use that track to a different place and cut down the cost of the bridge and a few things like that. But that's just where I'm at.
Well, we'll go meet with Woods Cross, the mayor and I, and we'll report back to you. And I'll try and find out more information from our engineer and see if we can. This is all happening kind of fast, and so
yeah.
Try and get as much for you as possible. I wish it were better news. It's really a difficult decision, I think.
Well, we've been dealt a different hand,
yes,
than we started with. And do you have anything else, Ken?
No, that's it. Thank you, Mayor.
Do we need a closed session for any reason? All right. I guess we talked about things in the open session. motion to adjourn.
Adjourn. Motion.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.